Welcome to Muskegon History and Beyond with the Lakeshore Museum Center. Our episode today is going to take a very popular case from the headlines and court testimony and try to present it to you here in its entirety to see who you believe did it. Although I will not tell you why it was historically important yet, it was indeed a historical case, as we will see when we get to the end. All the information provided will be factual. Now, let us begin by setting the scene. Our episode today looks at the death of John Gill. John Gill was born in Scotland and immigrated to the United States. He would settle in Dalton Township on a farm of about 40 acres. Gill would have a son named David, who stayed and worked on the farm with him. As Gill aged, he found it hard to maintain the farm and had several boarders who helped out, including a Corin Larson and on occasion her husband Ole Larson. The farm primarily had cows that were used for milk. These cows were owned by Gill, but the Larsons also had a few and sold all the milk in Muskegon, sharing the profits with Gild. In June 1883, Gild had sold the farm and property to the Larsons, who had paid for most of it, less 200 still owned to Gild. They had let Gild stay on the farm, though, and work it, with Corin Larson being his main caretaker. On the night of July 31st, 1883, Gild went to bed feeling sick, and the next morning, August 1st, sometime before 7 a.m., Gill was discovered dead in bed. That same day, the undertaker, James Bell Burney, was called to the farm to pick up the body. When he arrived, he talked to the Larsons and saw the body, which had a bluish tint to the throat and side of the head. By August 2nd, Gill was buried. The death was ruled from illness, as Gill had been heard by several of the farmhands throwing up during the night. However, in the weeks to follow, acquaintances and friends of Gill arose suspicions that foul play was to blame, and they talked to a deputy U.S. Marshal, A.C.M. King, who started an investigation. This would lead into a formal inquest and Gild's body being dug up in September of that same year. After being dug up, several of his organs were removed and sent off for testing at the University of Michigan. It was this testing that would turn this death into a crime. The result found 10.5 grams of arsenic in the stomach of Gild, an amount roughly the size of a pumpkin seed, which is also 5 times the lethal dose of arsenic. With this result, the true investigation into Gild's death began. Part of this would be another exhumation of Gild's body in late September to examine more organs and to look for further clues. So, the question was, who had killed John Gild and why? Among the suspects were his son David, who would inherit his father's possessions and had seen his father sell his farm away, both or one of the Larsons, who still owed Gild $200 and were taking care of the old man, or one of the farmhands who had a grudge, or possibly another acting party. Marshal King would be sent out to interview and find witnesses and gather information to answer this. James Bell Burney, the undertaker who went to the farm the day Gild died, would state that when he arrived, Corin Larson talked to him very rapidly, saying that Gild had been sick a short time, that he had vomited a great many times that night, and that he had a high fever. She told Bob Burney that she went into the room a few times, giving him milk and coffee to drink. At this point in time, Ole Larson, her husband, came up and stepped on her foot, which caused her to stop talking to Bob Burney. Ole Larson asked Bob Burney if an inquest had to be done into the death, or if the body could be buried right away, which Bob Burney thought was an odd question at the time. He did, based on looking at the body at the farm, and from Corin Larson's description of his symptoms, rule the death to a quick fever, which is why Gild was buried the following day without a formal inquest into it. John Olson, who was a farmhand and was there the night Gild died, would state and later testify that he noticed Gild sick a few days before he died. Olson said he saw John Gild around 7 p.m. that night. After that, he saw Corin Larson go into his room with a drink, as was typical. He heard Gild vomit a few times that night before Ole Larson returned from Muskegon sometime around midnight. He also said he heard someone go into Gild's room sometime around midnight after Ole Larson was home, but he did not know who it was. He saw the body the morning of Gild's death and saw blue marks near the neck and ear. When Gild was found dead, he noticed that David Gild, John's son, didn't have a reaction at all to the news, and that the Larsons didn't seem worried about the death either. Henry Holt, a local attorney, would comment on the sale of the farm to the Larsons, saying, "They arrived at my office on July 6th to exchange the deed of the farm. Gild was to be given $800 for it, with the Larsons paying $600 at the time of the deed transfer. much of the money paid to Guild was smaller coins and silver pieces with some bills. Holt recalled that Guild, after receiving the money, told Corin Larson that he didn't know what to do with it and gave it back to her to hang on to for him. After Guild's death, the remaining money on the deed was paid by Mr. Ole Larson in smaller coins and silver with some paper money. The farmhands were also paid in a similar fashion after Guild's death. Holt will later testify that the money looked similar. One thing to remember in this time is banks could be given the right to print money. So you may have a $10 bill from the National Lumbermen's Bank in Muskegon, for example, which would make the money slightly easier to pick out and identify than our current homogeneous money. A colleague of Holt's had also mentioned that previous to this, the Larsons had brought a drunk Guild into their office to try and get him to sign over the deed of the farm to them, but he wouldn't allow it as Guild was drunk, and it made the Larsons quite angry that they could not proceed with the land sale. Later witnesses would state that Guild had a drinking problem and was often found drunk. Guild's $600 from the sale of the farm was thought to be in his personal trunk, as it was never deposited in a bank account, but a Fanny Beck would go to the farm with David Guild, son of the deceased, for his father's possessions, including a horse. When Guild's trunk was opened by Ole Larson, who had the key to keep it safe, they found no money in it, nor the silver watches David remembered his father having, only a few clothes. Fanny Beck also thought that the lock looked like it had been tampered with. Miss Beck would also mention that she was the one who told Corin Larson about Guild's body being dug up for exhumation, and that upon this revelation, Miss Larson looked surprised and sick. Corin Larson had told Miss Beck on occasion that her husband, Ole Larson, was unkind and beat her and would not take care of her, so she had to take care of herself. Ole Larson worked as a woodturner in Muskegon and often stayed in Muskegon during the week instead of traveling back to the farm in Dalton. A neighbor of the farm, a Maria Edgar, also related that her and her husband came to the farm on the day of Guild's death. During this visit, Miss Larson opened the trunk and showed Maria that there was no money in it after Maria had asked what happened to the old man's money. Days before Guild's death, Corin Larson had come over to the Edgar house to sell milk and said Guild was very sick and she did not expect him to leave bed again. 10 to 12 days before his death, Corin Larson had been chatting with Maria Edgar, the same neighbor, and asked her to go to the store in North Muskegon for her to get her some rat poison to kill the neighbor's dog, which had killed some of the Larson's chickens on the farm. Maria replied that she wouldn't go with her for the whole world. Corin Larson then asked her if she would ask one of her boarders to buy it for her, to which she told her she would have to go and ask them herself, as Miss Edgar wanted no part in the business of poisoning the dog. A boarder was found to purchase the poison. The same boarder asked Corin Larson if she wanted him to poison the dog for her, but she replied that she would take care of it herself. At this point, our Detective King had his suspect. But take a moment and see what you think. Who was the killer, and what was their motivation? Now, I should say King had suspects, not suspect, as both Larsons were in his crosshairs. While it seemed Ole and Corin Larson were not on good terms and often lived separately, it was decided that both had acted in murdering John Guild using arsenic to poison him. The motive seems to be money, as the couple still owed Guild $200 for the farm, also had recently paid him $600, money which seems to have disappeared. Both Larsons were arrested on September 21, 1883. Corin Larson decided to be tried separate from her husband and to be tried first. Her trial, which began on January 29, 1884, was one of the first, if not the first, trial in Muskegon for a woman on the charge of murder. This made it quite the spectacle for the people of Muskegon, and the trial had a very long delay in its start, as it had trouble finding jurors who had no knowledge about the case, as the story was printed in the paper and spread very rapidly. The Chronicle called it one of the most sensational trials ever held in Muskegon, and often 300 spectators crowded in and around the courtroom to see the action. The case was also picked up nationally by many other papers. The trial of Corin Larson ended on February 17, 1884, with the jury finding her guilty of poisoning John Guild with arsenic using the rat poison Rough on Rats purchased for her by one of Miss Edgar's boarders. She was sent to prison in Jackson for the crime. However, as in any good true crime story, there is a twist. Ole Larson was now on trial for the murder of John Guild, now that his wife's case had ended. You might imagine that would proceed much in the same way as his wife's, but by the time of his case, new witnesses were found who testified that Guild had been despondent and had mentioned ending his own life. One even claimed he asked them to buy arsenic for him. Where these witnesses were in the earlier trial is a mystery to me. However, their testimony shed enough doubt into the story that old Larson was found not guilty of the crime of killing John Guild. With this new testimony, there was a call to retry Corin Larson, but a judge would not approve a retrial, and so she sat in prison until 1886. At this point in time, the Women's Christian Temperance Union petitioned Governor Alger of Michigan to pardon Corin Larson based on the new information discovered in her husband's trial. And he would do just that on December 30th, 1886. While it seemed that the death of John Guild had now been solved as self-inflicted, there was still one lingering mystery. The $600 that the Larsons paid Guild for the farm were not found in his trunk and was not noted in any of his bank accounts. His son David never claimed to receive it, and the money was not tied to the Larsons pocketing it beyond circumstantial evidence. But there remains one final wrinkle to this story that may solve that mystery. After being freed from prison, Corin Larson would live her life in poverty and squalor, often relying on charity or borrowing money from neighbors and friends to survive. When she passed away in 1910, a thorough search was done of her residence, and this uncovered a bank account record showing that she had, interestingly enough, $1,300 in a savings account, around $40,000 in today's money. Make of that what you will. Thank you for listening to this somewhat different episode. I hope you enjoyed hearing about this interesting case and its connection to some of the more recognizable names in Muskegon like Holt and Belle Burney. Please leave us a comment with what you think actually happened to John Guild and his money, and let us know what you think about this style of episode.